good evening. I'm Carrie, alcoholic.
Hi, Carrie.
I want to thank Billy for inviting me to come. I also want to thank my friend Catherine, who drove up with me from Washington this afternoon. We got here a little bit early, so we were able to enjoy the pig and steak. And it was so good, we both got to-go bags for tomorrow. My sobriety date is October 21st, 2009, so I'm six. I act very much like a six-year-old. I have some twin niece and nephew who are seven, so I kind of track my progress by them. I just saw them at Thanksgiving, and, you know, they're, like, less annoying than they used to be, you know, still a little out of control, but kind of fun. And so I like to think that's about where I am now. You know, lots of room to grow, but not as annoying as I once was. My home group is the Camel Group. We meet on Monday nights at 7:30 p.m. in Arlington. It's a speaker meeting. Everyone's most welcome if you're in the area. And they do have a sponsor. I'll just talk a little bit about the holiday season. And my home group had its holiday party on the 14th. I was in charge. Really, I think I was like the co-chair, but in my mind, you know, I was like, no, I'm just in charge. And one of my fellow home group members had placed like the napkins and the forks in this one particular place. And then I came by, you know, like 10 minutes later, and someone had moved them like to a different location. And I was like, oh no, this is my party. These forks are going to stay where they were. And I mean, this is the story of my life. I remember when I read in the third step, you know, it talks about that, you know, the alcoholic is like the actor who wants to be the director, and I'm like, what is the problem here? I don't understand, and, you know, thinks he knows where things should go. Yes, I do. Anyway, you know, and I think thanks to the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, real psychic change that's happened to me, you know, and I do count these small miracles, which I think to normal people is like, whatever, the forks can go wherever. But for me, they can't. And it is, you know, and it is no small miracle that, you know, it just came over me like, okay, this is about you. This isn't about the forks or her who just moved them. And I didn't say anything. And importantly, in about 15 minutes, I got back to the state I was in when we started, which was, you know, reasonably happy. So I know I'm making progress. I know it. So I got drunk for the first time when I was about 14. From a big family, loving family, and, you know, what I understand now about myself is that, you know, I just have predisposition, spiritual malady, and I just was never okay, despite, you know, being in a pretty warm and welcoming environment. And, you know, I got all kinds of evidence of that today, you know, leading from zero to 14 years. But this particular day, one of my brothers had a field trip on a ship, like an old, I don't know, some old ship. And it was like an overnight thing, and I don't know why we all went, but we all went. And way in the bottom of the ship was the drink station, and there was some beer and some wine there. And I found myself there by myself. And, you know, I can tell you my mental state, which was, why do I have to be here? Well, you know, why are we on his field trip? No one ever comes on my field trips. Why do we have to drive 2 hours to this stupid ship? You know, and it's taking up my whole weekend when I could be, like, staring at my Hello Kitty and, you know, re-alphabetizing my animal alphabet cards, which I did. You know, like, why this? And whatever. And that was just my constant state about everything. Like, why me? Why am I here? Why? How come I'm not getting what they're getting? And I had four brothers and sisters, so there was a lot to compare to, you know, all the time. And so I grabbed a red Solo cup, and I poured some orange soda into it, and then I saw the wine, White Zinfandel. I'll date myself. White Zinfandel wine. And I thought, let me pour some of that. And then there's no one around. I'm by myself with the drink. So I pour some White Zinfandel wine in there, and I drink that down. And, you know, I have no idea. There's alcoholism in my family. I later was told, you know, to be careful, watch out. But I, you know, I didn't know any of that. And I had no idea what the physical part of alcoholism is. I didn't know anything about the phenomenon of craving, anything like that. But I definitely can tell you that I have it, because that night I had four more of those drinks. Each time, you know, less orange soda, more white Zinfandel wine. And I don't know if anyone remembers wine coolers, but what is a wine cooler but basically wine and soda? And so when those came out a couple years later, that was my first resentment. Like, what do you mean you're making money off of putting wine and soda together? I invented that. That's my So that was the first time I got drunk. I just basically kind of wandered off into some corner. This is one of the advantages of being from a big family, is that, you know, there's no man-to-man defense. It's all a zone defense. And so if you can just escape the herd, you know, nobody notices or cares what you're doing. And so I just kind of wandered off somewhere and went to bed and fell asleep. Nobody noticed anything. Like, absolutely nothing happened to me. And so I drank like that for about the next 14 years, which is to say, when I drank, I got drunk, but it really wasn't that often. And I've already told you a little bit about my sort of mental state, and that just kept going. I just didn't have any relief from alcohol. I didn't really get that until I was in my late 20s. And so, yeah, throughout throughout middle school, throughout high school, I was neurotic, anxious, absolute racing mind. Just hundreds and hundreds of ideas going on at any moment, some of them coming out of my mouth to various effects. I went to college, and one of the ways that I overcame this anxiety and this racing mind was just to be, like, super busy and super involved in lots and lots of things. And I think some people, like, they don't feel okay about themselves and they become, like, shy and introverted and withdrawn. And not me. I am, like, louder and more, like, look at me, look at me, look at me. So absolute attention seeker and busy, busy, busy person. When I went to college, I had a boyfriend from Russia, and he told me that I reminded him of the kids that he had gone to school with in the Young Communist League, like, very earnest, like, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, I'm always ready to serve the motherland, you know, that kind of person. And I thought it was a compliment. And then I remembered, you know, that he had fled the Soviet Union, that's why he was in the U.S. And, you know, we were at war with them, and it was like, oh, okay. So that's how things were going. I moved up to Washington, D.C. by myself. I was living in Texas, and came up to D.C., went to law school, and, you know, again, was just busy, 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 like, I'm going to be, you know, I want to be the best student, I want to be in all the clubs, I want everyone to pay attention to me, just keeping that sort of anxiety and racing mind at bay, and, you know, that, for me, that worked for the most part. My drinking picked up in law school, and I started to have some consequences here and there. I remember one time having somebody call me on Wednesday during the day and say that he had found my ID outside of a bar that was near our school. And, you know, it was just like, well, you know, these things happen. Like, thank goodness for good Samaritans who find my ID. I say that because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was kind of like, I was like, oh, I don't know, like, I think this really just picked up and just really accelerated just in the last couple of years. You know, I really can't. But you know, I was in such a fog that it just took time. And you know, thankfully, you know, we have tools. And for anybody that's new, we have a tool called the 4-step, and, you know, my sponsor was like, go back in 5-year chunks and just, like, stay on the 5 years, you know, and just stay on it and milk it, milk it, milk it, and before you move on to the previous 5 years. And so by doing that, you know, I got to remember these little flashes, these little incidents that happened, and, and therefore come to an understanding that I was indeed powerless over alcohol and that I'd had a problem for a long time. So, but then I'm finishing up law school. I have a really nice job. I'm all set. Everything is going well. But you know, I'm still dissatisfied, and I can also look forward and be like, okay, now I'm just going to work for the rest of my life. Like, how am I going to keep up this attention, and you know, how am I going to keep up my school attitude, you know, now that I'm in the real world? And I knew it was like I sort of intuitively knew that I needed like something. And you know, they say in Buddhist teaching, I'm not a Buddhist, but I just repeat things that I hear. You know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And my teacher was a guy named Mark. He was the boyfriend of a guy that I was in law school with. And he sat me down and said, look, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm gonna tell you some things. So there's beer and wine, and then there's hard liquor. And in hard liquor, there's a kind of hard liquor called whiskey. And then there's a kind of whiskey that's put in barrels that have been burned on purpose, and that's bourbon. And then there's a kind of bourbon, which is made in Kentucky, that, well, I guess all, I don't know if all bourbon's made in Kentucky, but whatever. And that's Maker's Mark. And, you know, he pulls out this bottle, like, out of a brown paper bag, and it's got the beautiful paper and the red wax and the, you know, everything. And, you know, puts some ice in a glass, some ginger ale. No, it pours the bourbon first and lets it sit like wine. And then pours the ginger ale over it. And, you know, I drank that drink down. And that, I can say, I was 28 years old, and I can say that I got for the first time in my life what it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for anybody who's new, that's our book. It's technically called Alcoholics Anonymous, but we call it the big book. And I got that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from taking a drink. I got the effect produced by alcohol, and I was like, this is awesome. And very quickly after that, I changed a lot of things. I was going to church weekly. I was a lector at my church. I was raised in a pretty religious family. My brother is a Catholic priest. Whatever, and I think that's what I was doing. And within, I mean, I want to say maybe 3 months, I was living in this one part of town that is fairly easy to park in, and that's where my church was. And then I moved into this hipper part of town where it was much more difficult to park. And you have extremely strong convictions until parking and moving my car is involved. And it became very difficult to, like, get a space after coming back from church. So I was just like, all right, that's got to go. And so I didn't know that I was basically living the life of a controlled drinker, and I was living a life of an alcoholic who was attempting to control her drinking. So it was all just completely unconscious. But I had a lot of rules about drinking really up to that point that I didn't even know about until I started breaking them. And, you know, can just look back in hindsight. And so, like, I wouldn't get drunk twice on the weekends. I didn't drink on the weekdays. I did not buy or keep alcohol in my house. I didn't drink alone. And very quickly, I started doing all those things. And Mark was my teacher. I mean, I remember going to this one liquor store in D.C. With him and seeing him, you know, and then I was like, well, maybe I'll just get, like, those little airplane bottles, you know, because whatever. And, you know, and then he would get, like, the very largest, like, most economical bottle of Maker's Mark. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can do that. I didn't know how to use a corkscrew. Like, I was useless, hopeless. But I had a teacher. I had a sponsor, really. I mean, you know, if I look at it that way. Yeah, and so, and I have to tell you that for about 3 years, it was just completely awesome because my brain just unlocked. It quit racing, and, like, nothing changed. Nothing was different in my life. I was very, you know, I started my career, so I was very irritated with the people that I worked with constantly. My love life remained the same disastrous series of either fake relationships that I made up in my head, like, I meet you on Wednesday, by Friday, you know, I'm convinced that you're the one, you know, Saturday, I'm picking out wedding dresses, and then when you don't call by Monday, I'm, like, deep depression. You know, these women's magazines say that if you're in a relationship, it should take you about half as long as you're in the relationship to get over it. So, like, if you're in a six-month relationship, it should take you about 3 months to get over it. I'm the opposite. Like, if I'm in no relationship at all, like, it takes me weeks to get over it. And, if, you know, heaven forbid I was actually in a relationship. Then I remember, actually, when I was in college, I was a senior, and I was talking to somebody, and I was just going on about this guy that I had dated when I was a sophomore. And this guy, you know, bless his heart, you know, because it's like people don't speak truth to people like me. I mean, I told you, I'm loud, I'm spastic, I know it all. And so nobody ever told me the truth. I get the, okay, you know, and then just the back away and then never hear from them again. I got that a lot. But this guy, he just said, that's kind of a long time. And whatever. And at that time, I took action. I think I went into therapy for the first of what would become, you know, many, many, many times. Which, whatever, that didn't work. But at least it was something to sort of keep the full-on crazy at bay. Anyway, for about 3 years, it was just really awesome. You know, I had a solution. I had something every 24 hours where I could just shut off what was going on in my head. And I actually became part of a really lovely subculture, you know, of people who drank. And I started this happy hour, and you know, would always be the first one there, the last one to leave. I remember people would leave to like go let their dog out, and I would just be like, what? For a dog? Like, I can't even say, like, maybe if you had a kid, but like you're leaving to take care of a dog? It's really until I really had no idea that everybody didn't drink like I did. I really had no idea. So after about 3 years, it wasn't as awesome anymore. And I just, you know, I spent a lot more time in, you know, anger and discord and so forth. And I would just, I just remember just going through the day, and just the worst things would happen. And, you know, people were just so against me. And it was like the Crimean War in my office. And there was these factions over here and these factions over there. I worked with like 6 people. But like it would just go on, and I would sit with Mark at night and just go over the day. And he was always 100% on my side. 100%. And we would go through a bottle of wine, another bottle of wine, and then bourbon or whatever, and it just went on like that. And, you know, and I don't have to tell you, there's no growth in that. There's no change. There's no, you know, there's no nothing. And all that happened was all those relationships got worse. I just got more and more convinced that other people were my problem, that my stressful job was my problem, my stressful organization was my problem, and these stressful people that I was around were my problem. And I was trying all different kinds of things. I was reading self-help books. Someone said I was going to therapy and just doing all this. And in 2003, it was all too much. And so I decided to move. And I moved to Armenia. And I don't know, anyone who's new, we have a story in the back of our big book that puts a name to this phenomenon, which is called the geographical cure. You know, basically the attempt to fix myself by moving. And I got to tell you, in my experience, the geographical cure absolutely works for about 30 days before you leave and for about 30 days after you get there. And I'm telling you, I was happy. I was serene. I was like, this was such a good idea. I got there. I was like, this is great. This was such a good idea. Way to go. And then, you know, and then at like a month and a day, it was like I got into my first, you know, thing with somebody that I worked with. And it was like, oh, great. They have annoying people here, too. And Armenia is a great place to go if you happen to have a slip and have a couple $1,000 for a plane ticket. I recommend it. It's a good place to drink. They have these beers that are like this tall, probably like whatever the max percent of alcohol beer could be, like, I don't know, in the teens, I guess. 50 cents maximum, and just available absolutely everywhere, 24 hours a day, no laws, no restrictions. They are the producers of wine in the Soviet Union, so they do a pretty good job. And you can get anything delivered at any time of night for, like, no money at all. One thing they did not have in Armenia was Maker's Mark, except for at the airport. Now, at the duty-free at the airport. Now, all the flights in Armenia come in between 2 in the morning and 4 in the morning. All of them, no matter where they're coming from, that is the time they come in. I don't know why. So if you ever had a relative or a boss or somebody coming into the country, it was a big, you know, it was a big deal. Like, you had to get up and go in the middle of the night to go get them at the airport. And you had to go get them because whatever, because it's Armenia. And I was like the most helpful trusted servant you've ever seen. Anyone need to go to the airport? I was like, I'll go. Because, you know, I would buy this Maker's Mark intending to ration it out. I was the same, actually. I really loved Diet Dr. Pepper, and they would get that at the commissary sometimes, and I would buy all of it. And then I'd be like, okay, this is going to last me for like 5 months, or, you know, whatever. And the Maker's Mark, too. And all of it would just be gone. I cannot control myself. So I always need to go to the airport to get the Maker's Mark. So, you know, there I am, having a great foreign adventure, new cultures, new experiences, and 6 months into my one-year stint, I'm exactly as I am in Washington, D.C. I hate everybody that I work with. I'm on the couch multiple hours a day, almost entire weekend. I'm binge-watching. I'm drinking. I'm having alcohol delivered to me. And ordering pizza and binge-watching American DVDs, complaining about the Armenians full-time. I had this whole comedy routine that I would do for anyone who listened about how stupid the Armenians are. They were on my 4th step, I guarantee you. Then they had to be on my 8th step because I did cause harm to their reputation, because I met, you know, hundreds of people who had never been to Armenia. They had no concept of Armenia or Armenian culture. They just got my version, you know, the 10-minute comedic, they are so stupid version. And so I did have to I had to call some people in Armenia, my sponsors of the view that if you cause the harm in person, you should make the amend in person. But I got an exception for Armenia because it's so far, and I got to call those people. And then as to the Armenian people in general, I was told just quit talking bad about them. So please don't ask me anything about the Armenians, and don't tempt me. So I came back, you know, absolutely like, oh, my gosh, thank goodness I'm back in the United States of America where everything's awesome. And then, you know, 6 weeks later, like, oh, this metro is so stupid. Everyone here is so stupid. You know, whatever. Just, I can, you know, cannot, restless dissatisfaction cannot be okay. So life goes on. I get a different, completely different job that everyone, you know, I'm in discord with everybody over there. I get another job. And everything is just getting worse. I'm using the same exact tools, the same self-help books, the same therapy, although I would switch therapists because they would always be like, well, this person doesn't understand me, and I would just move over to somebody else who didn't understand me. And, you know, like I said, there's no growth, there's no change in that. I'm sure people who go to therapy and do what the therapist says, there's growth and change there. But I remember I had this therapist one time who actually said, this again? And I was like, I do not believe you can speak to me that way. What do you mean, this again? Yes, this is what's going on. This is my issue. No, I cannot let it go. But even the therapist, you know, who's trained and not supposed to say things like that, was like, really? Can't you just get over that? Can't you move on from that? But no, I can't. So I really wasn't doing anything about my drinking. I did not see my drinking as a problem at all, and that hardly changed. Maybe a year before I got sober, I didn't drink for like a day or two. I had to give some kind of presentation, and so I just kind of laid low. My hands started shaking, and so I thought, oh, what is this? And so I went to my higher power, which was the internet, and started looking around. I was sure that I had Parkinson's disease, and I was looking for that. And I was hoping for that, too. Like, please, you know, fatal neurological disorder. Do not let this be alcohol-related, please. But I ruled out the Parkinson's, and then so I did start looking at things related to alcohol and alcohol abuse. Not alcoholism, just alcohol abuse. And what I learned that day was that the difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic, according to the internet, was whether one could control one's drinking or not. I didn't know that. And I didn't know that had anything to do with anything. And I truly had never tried it, right? From 14 to 28, I did not drink that often when I drank, got drunk. From 28 to this point, where I would have been, I don't know, 37 or something, if I wanted to drink, I drank. And that was that. So I started on my first period of controlled drinking. And I consulted with my sponsor, which was myself. I did not consult with Mark. No way. He and I did do controlled drinking together way later. I'll tell you about that. But I just consulted with myself. I said, what is a good amount of time not to drink in order to definitely not be an alcoholic? And I decided 7 days. So that's what I did. I set about, and I did not drink for 7 days. And I didn't. And on the seventh day, I said, okay, experiment over, check, not alcoholic, look at me. But you know what? I think it'd be a good idea to cut back. And it's day seven, and 1 minute, I went back to what I was doing and went right back to as much as I was drinking and absolutely did not think about moderating, did not think about cutting back, did not even think about this period, didn't think about that, web searches, any of it, for another year and a half. And in that year, things just kept getting worse. By the time 2009 rolled around, just to give you a little flavor of sort of where the state of my life, I was on probation at my job. I had actually been promoted that year and then placed on probation. If that's not alcoholic, I don't know what is. And I wasn't on probation, and I wasn't in trouble at work for performance or for not getting my job done, because I did get my job done. But I had such unmanageable emotions that I got in trouble in the workplace. And I got sent to anger management twice. And the whole time being like, oh, these people are so sensitive. Like, number one. And number two, how is it that you have come to a meeting without the proper pieces of paper and now I am in trouble? Like, how does this happen? What kind of messed up, yet again, workplace have I found myself in? That's how it was. But I would, you know, I went through the steps, and I would make the fake apology and change and correct my behavior for a little while. In one case, for a year. And then the second complaint that happened in that workplace, I got the message, okay, don't yell in the workplace. First of all, that creates witnesses, which is not good. And it's whatever, it's just not done. It's not done, I guess, you know. So this other situation happens where, you know, I'm not pleased, and I think, okay, I'm not going to yell. Well, the woman thought that I was going to hit her, and that's what the complaint said. And, you know, at the time, it was like, are you kidding me? Like, and the fact is, I am not a violent person. I have zero violence in my history. I am extremely violent with my mouth, but physically, it's just not my thing. And it doesn't happen drunk or sober. So I knew that I wasn't going to hit her. And, you know, so at the time, it was like, this is crazy. Like, this is absolutely insane. How is this happening? But what I know now, because of the steps and having gone through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with the sponsor, you know, I believe that she believed that I was going to hit her, and I believe I was so full of untreated alcoholism, untreated rage, that I'm sure, and whatever, I thought she was wrong because she didn't know where something was, you know. So that is the death penalty warranted sin in my book, you know, when you don't have your files together in my office. And so I believe everything in my body said that I was going to pummel her into the ground. And I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that. And thanks to the steps, I'm less like that. We'll just leave it there. So it's 2009. I'm on probation at my job, and I told you I'm really into school and job, and that's my one thing. My love life is still a disaster. I don't like the way I look. Like, So, but I always have had my career and my job. And once that, now I'm on probation, like potentially going to get fired from a job. Like, it was like that. It really got to me. So I'm seeking solutions. So I'm on probation at my job. I'm drinking probably 6-7 days a week. I weigh almost 300 pounds. My hair is an inch short all the way around. I keep things extremely simple. I like to get out of bed and be at my desk in 30 minutes, and it's a 20-minute drive. So I get out of bed, throw water in my hair, little men's hair product, and boom, out the door. I owned one pair of pants and 5 shirts. All the shirts had stains on them. And I absolutely thought every single day I would look and be like, that's got a stain. And then I would think, well, if anyone thinks or says anything about it, they can just think I got it at breakfast this morning, because that happens to people, and you got to go through the day with your stained shirt. Now, I have no concept that I'm doing this week in, week out with the same people, right, that I'm working with and going out to bars with or whatever. But that was just my thought. That was how I lived. I had this bra that was broken, and the underwire would, like, come out, and it would pop out, and so there would be this, like, wire, like, sticking like this. And I used to, and so, you know, instead of, like, fixing it or getting a new one or whatever, I would just, every morning I would, like, push it back in, and I would do it on the bed, like, on the sheet, so then the wire would make holes in the sheet. I actually just did a big cleaning this summer, and I found that sheet. And it's like, I mean, it's full of holes from this wire being pushed. Anyway, it used to come up. My niece would ask me about it. I told her it was a microphone, and I was recording everything that she said. Some of the little people in my family, I detect like a touch of the spiritual malady, and this poor little thing believed me, and he was like running around like telling everyone and all paranoid about what I'm doing and everything like that. I just think that's hilarious. And you know, and I think I'm eccentric. I know that I'm not. I know that that's a little weird, but I just think I'm just eccentric, and that's just, you know, how it is. So I'm in therapy. I'm depressed. I'm anxious. I started to get claustrophobic, and this was hard for me. So I like to travel, and I started to get really nervous on planes, movie theater, seat belts. And so I absolutely thought that I was just mentally ill, and I was just adding a new symptom almost every year, like clockwork. And I thought, well, we'll just keep going with this. I talked to myself. I used to have these really big scarves, and I would just wrap them around, and I would walk around DuPont Circle for hours and talk to myself. And it was like, I mean, that's just it, is when your brain is so disorganized, like it's important to, like, get straight and to think, you know, and to think things. But, like, it was so disorganized that I had to speak, you know, to, like, get the important thoughts out. And so I had to. I had to do this, like, walking around talking to myself. So that's what I was doing. Anyway, so it's 2009. It's the beginning of 2009. I have just completely freaked out on a plane. Like, I was almost thinking, like, how bad would a straitjacket hurt? Because I really want to get off this plane. And I know the only way I am getting off is in a straitjacket. So I was kind of like testing it. Like, what would it really hurt, or would it just kind of hurt? Anyway, I wound up kind of maintaining some composure, but absolutely miserable. Like, you know that when you're just exerting every single ounce of power that you have to not freak out. Anyway, and so I was flying. I was doing the second part of that plane trip. And I said, I need a lot of books. This is how I'm going to get through this flight, is I'm going to have so many books that I'm just going to absorb myself into them. And so I bought this book called Take Back Your Life with Outlook. And it wasn't like Take Back Your Life with a sunny outlook on life. It was Take Back Your Life with Microsoft Outlook. And it totally worked for this plane trip, because it was all about how you could just organize everything into the computer with colors and lists and sublists and everything. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah. And this is how it always was with me. There was always some solution of the week where I was like, okay, yeah, this is it. This is going to be the thing. And that didn't work either. A couple of months after that, one of the solutions that I went for is, okay, well, I'm gonna take another look at this alcohol thing and try this controlled drinking. I found a program on the internet called Moderation Management. And I loved the idea of moderation management. There was one meeting a week in the D.C. area. We have 2,000 meetings a week of Alcoholics Anonymous, just by the way, in the D.C., greater D.C. area. There was one meeting, and it wasn't even meeting anymore, and I emailed the person and he emailed, like, right away, like, oh, we stopped a meeting, but we'll meet, I can meet with you. And I could just feel the desperation, like, through the email. And I was like, nah, I don't know. So I just do it myself with these handy online tools where I can track my drinking. And so I did, their step one is count your drinks for 30 days. So I did that. I was dating a bartender, so I had my phone. I would go in the bathroom at the bar and write down my 4 glasses of wine, 2 tequila shots, you know, everything I was doing. For a month, I did that. And then I forgot about it for months. Then it's August, and it's now I'm on to something else, and now I'm taking a look at depression. I'm reading a book about depression, and this book has a chapter called Alcohol and Depression, and I am not kidding you. I said, I'm skipping this. This is not relevant, because I hear you, Internet, that alcohol is a depressant. However, this is not my experience. My experience is I am depressed 20 to 21 hours a day. I wait until 5 o'clock or 11 a.m. on the weekends, and I start to drink. I am not depressed. That is the time I am not depressed. So don't, maybe for other people, alcohol is depressant. That is not the case for me. I'm not going to read this chapter. But then I remembered that I had one of those lists with the sub-lists and the lists and the colors and everything. And I said, okay, the way I was going to get over depression was reading this book about depression. So I read the whole chapter. And it had one sentence that said, you know, nobody knows whether people get depressed because they drink or people drink because they're depressed. But if you don't stop, you won't know. So for whatever reason, I heard that, and then I went back to step two of moderation management, which is don't drink for 30 days. And I started that day. I had this bottle of Whitetail, some kind of white wine, Whitetail, that, you know, was a big one that had this much left in it, because I drank the whole thing the night before. While doing emails and talking to people for my work, by the way, but I didn't drink the whole thing. So if I drank the whole bottle, I would definitely be an alcoholic, but, you know. No. Anyway, I dramatically poured that out. I could hear this like soundtrack going in my head. And I started to not drink for 30 days. And I made it, actually, those 30 days. My emotions completely went out of control during this time. I was already at like DEFCON 4 emotions, and they went to like DEFCON 5. And it was somebody that I had just screamed at during this time period, of somebody I was dating, who said, you know, after, you know, I was making all my apologies, who said, you know, well, maybe it's because you're so emotional because you just stopped drinking, and, you know, maybe that's what's going on. So I said, all right, well, let me go get some help for that. And I called up the alcohol people at Georgetown University. I got a lady on the phone. She said, well, I told her a little bit about my situation. She said, well, you might want to think about going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, oh, wait a minute here. I mean, you know. That's very rash. You really don't know me. I think we need to get together, professional woman to professional woman. I will explain to you about moderation management, and then we will see. And she said, okay, well, I'm quite booked, and so I can't see you for 3 weeks. Also, I see that your insurance is X insurance, and I don't accept that kind of insurance, so you're just going to have to pay full price, which is $250 for one consultation. And I thought, terrific. You are the woman for me. You are so prestigious that you're all booked up for 3 weeks. And you're so good, and everybody wants to see you. And you're so good that you don't even have to take this rinky-dink insurance. Perfect. So I was completely bought in to whatever she was going to say. So I go to meet her, and this was in October. And I talked to her for 50 minutes. And at the end of it, she says, well, my suggestion is, and, you know, I've paid for this big time, so what is your suggestion? He said, well, I suggest you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went that night, she had actually suggested like a 6 p.m. meeting, and then I went home and I took a nap, and so I woke up after 6 p.m., and so I just went looking for another meeting, and it was a meeting called that was called that had beginners in the title. I was like, okay, I'm a beginner. And it was in a church, and I was like, oh, no, not this business. But then the church had, like, a rainbow flag, so I was like, okay, this is a progressive church, so it's okay. I had no idea. So anyone who's new, like, AA and this church, like, has nothing to do with each other, like, they just whatsoever. So I had no idea, so I was like, I thought I was, like, basically going back to church, which I wasn't. But I went, and I happened to stumble into really one of the most enthusiastic groups of Alcoholics Anonymous in my area, and really a bunch of people who were absolute 12-step champions. And I know that because I wound up hanging around with them for several years and was absolutely encouraged to talk to new people, to read the Chapter 7 Working with Others, to really work on my skills as somebody who could help somebody to come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I feel really fortunate about that. I mean, I really feel that I got an absolute classic textbook 12-step from the minute I walked up those steps, really to this day. And I'm really grateful for that. Really, really, really grateful. Because, you know, I told you, I'm super belligerent, intellectually self-sufficient. I know what the deal is. I know what's going on. Very skeptical. I've already tried, like, 18 different things. And if I had gotten a message, like, any kind of sideways, I just don't know that I would have persisted to stay to find the life-saving magic that I found here. And they invited me to go to coffee. They talked about their drinking. They told disgusting stories about projectile puking and picking up glasses at parties that were left over and sipping them and then finding a cigarette butt in the glass and whatever. And, you know, and the fact is that I was absolutely not being honest about my drinking in lots and lots of quarters. About 3 months before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had dinner with two friends. And they said, well, what kind of wine do you want to get? And I said, well, I like to start with a bottle of white, and then we can move to red for the entree. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I saw their faces. I was like, uh-oh. I'm not with Mark. That was not the appropriate thing to say. Because that was absolutely how I rolled. If there was two of us, I would have rolled like that. No problem. And they said, start with a bottle of white. And then, well, we were going to have, like, a glass of wine and maybe share it or something. And I was like, ugh. Don't you judge me. I will take your blonde heads and knock them together. But at AA that night at coffee, yeah, I wasn't around those people. They were talking about projectile puking, you know, in the parking lot. So whatever I had to say, you know, no one was going to judge me for having a bottle of white and then a bottle of red, you know. And, you know, it worked. So it got the defenses down. And, you know, so then all these little AA things started to work. Like, you guys go to a meeting every day, or, like, new people go to a meeting every day, and then they go, well, how many days did you drink? And it's like, you know, I can't be like, oh, two, you know, because I've already told them that I was drinking every day. Blah, blah, blah. I went away for the weekend, and one of those people from AA called me, and I really was really shocked. So I had to go back. I was going to go back and see this therapist, so I thought this was going to be like a once a week kind of a thing. And anyway, he called me, and just kept going with, you know, what I know now is the language of the heart. Just talks about himself and talks about the way he felt and, you know, all these stories. And I'm like, why is this guy telling me all this? And then boom, like, you know, the lock hit. And open, the key hit the lock and open. And I was in the middle of the street in the suburb of Boston, and I am just telling this guy, who I've met like 2 days ago, I am telling him everything. I am telling him about being on probation at my job. I'm telling him about the bartender that I'm dating. I didn't mention this, but we've already broken up and gotten back together and broken up and gotten back together. It's our third time. So really compatible relationship. And I'm just telling all of this. I believe that was the beginning of my recovery. I came back to D.C. from that little vacation and got a sponsor and began working the steps with that sponsor. When I got to the fourth step, I was so excited. when my sponsor said, okay, the first thing I want you to do is write down everybody that you're angry with and what they did to you. This is awesome. Like we did this in therapy, but not in this like organized fashion in the paper with the columns and everything. Like, and you know, and there was no guarantee that anyone was going to listen to it. I see step five though. You need to listen to this. So I was so excited, and I am not one to read ahead, so I did not read ahead, and so I mean I was thorough. I mean just on and on and on. And, you know, I mean, and you come to that column four where, you know, it says cover up all that, cover up that, completely put it out of your mind, what did they do, and look at my mistakes. And I was like, are you kidding me? I would not have been this thorough if I knew this was coming. But it was absolutely helpful, and I, you know, I started to feel those first shifts. And, you know, one of them was related to work, which is, I told you, I mean, ever I went, D.C., Armenia, wherever, like, everyone is annoying, and everyone is getting in my way, and everyone is getting on my nerves. And I really thought that was like, a law thing, and, like, a legal thing, and a lawyer thing, and a Washington, D.C. workaholic, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, never mind the fact that I went to Armenia, which, you know, and it was still like that. But with the fourth step, what I saw was, you know, my minimum wage job in high school at the Ace Hardware is this, you know, it's the same thing. Same people getting on my nerves, not doing what I think they should be doing. And, you know, and I got to have some open-mindedness of the idea, like, it might be me. And really, very importantly, I understood the practicality that even if it wasn't completely me, I was the only thing that could ever be done about it was you know, my mistakes. Those are the only things that I could correct. And so there's hope in that. You know, for somebody who was just absolutely circling the drain, just only going down, never going up, and always wondering why. There was hope for me in that, in the practicality of that. When it came time to do the amends, I had such a tremendous amount of willingness to do those amends. And I say that, and I know that today, because today I have zero willingness to do amends. And it stinks. So anybody who is new, if you get willingness to do amends, just run and make them and find as many people as possible. Fly, train, plane, automobile, and get them done. Because I'm not saying that everyone is going to lose willingness, but I have, and it's terrible. It stinks. So I did made a lot of amends. Like I said, I like to travel, so I had to go to California. I went to Texas. I drove down the East Coast for about a week, and I kept a spreadsheet. I like to keep spreadsheets. You may know the promises are talked about before you are halfway through with this step. You will be amazed. So I was like, when am I getting to 50% plus one? 50% plus one. And it was actually right around that trip I took to the East Coast, and I had gone all the way to Cape Cod and was on my way back, and it absolutely happened. Like, just that, you know, a feeling of peace and intuitively knowing how to handle situations. Like, it was awesome. It was totally amazing, completely worth it. And now I try to live in steps 10, 11, and 12 every day. And just some of the things that have happened in sobriety. When I was drinking, I had this one job, and I just had no clue. And so I was telling my coworker, who was like actually above me, she wasn't my boss, but she was above me. And I was telling her, yeah, I really don't like working here. And what I really want is to go work for the government, but only in a presidential appointment. And then I did absolutely nothing, you know, to do this. I remember even sitting, we have this book that's called the Plum Book. It's like all the plum assignments, presidential appointments. I took a pen and I scratched through all the ones I would not accept. And then did absolutely nothing to get these. I did go on one meeting with somebody who could have helped me. And I had this, like I said, I was very obese. And so I had this big shawl that I just wore all the time like this. Anyway, I went and did this meeting with this guy. And I stood at his desk. Like, he was so not interested in seeing me that I didn't even get the feeling I could sit. So I just stood there. Anyway, I stood there for about 5 minutes and had this meeting with him. And then I left, and my fly was open, like, right, you know, at his level. So that was the kind of professional image that I was projecting, you know, just who you want in your presidential administration. And then when I was a year sober, I actually got a chance to apply for such a position. And I asked one person outside of AA for help. He told me, this is what the job is, and this is how you got to go in there and sell yourself. And so I did exactly what he said, because I've learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to take direction and take advice. I've now learned to take advice from more than one person and get a wide range, because he was wrong. And I basically, you know, I sold a wrong version, not to mention that I was still, whatever, I was two, and I was acting like a two-year-old. And so whatever. In March this year, I started a position as a presidential appointee in the U.S. government. And and I interviewed and I participated in it this way, this time, you know, completely 100% the AA way. I asked for help from every single person I knew who had anything to do with anything. I ran all that input by my sponsor, and crafted a plan and like went through like in a disciplined and AA way. You know, I was dressed appropriately. I was on time. When they canceled one meeting, it was like no big deal. I didn't be like, who are you and why are you wasting my time? Which is, you know, things I would have done before. And so today I really have the job of my dreams. And I could not have done this job at 5 years sober, at 4 years sober, at 3 years sober, at 2 years sober, and definitely not drunk. Absolutely not. It's just like a slightly higher level than anything I've ever been involved in before. And of course, every minute I'm like, they're going to discover any minute that I don't belong here, and I'll be out, even though everyone's losing their job in next January. I'll be out sooner, but self-doubt never goes away. Anybody that's new, absolutely 100% my experience. If you've got what I got, that spiritual malady that's solved by drinking, it's completely my experience that AA, done with the sponsor, working the steps and helping other people, you know, has worked to clear it all up, and have a huge amount of hope for this sounds super corny, but really for the rest of my life, and that if I keep doing what I'm doing, it's just gonna keep getting better. These things I'm still dragging around are gonna get smaller and better, and it's really a life second to none. So I invite you to join us. Thanks. Mm-hmm.